I'm going to read two letters from this anthology compiled by a fellow named Bob Blaisdell called Civil War Letters from Home, Camp, and Battlefield. It's quite a good anthology containing all kinds of letters written by people at the time, such as letters from soldiers to their mothers, letters from generals to their wives, letters describing battles, and so on. It's a really good compilation and brings so much to life of what those times were like. The two letters I'd like to read are firstly a letter from Randolph McKim, who was a resident of Baltimore, who must have come from a good family, who had a nice property named Belvedere. And Baltimore, you may be aware, was one of those cities that was in a bit of turmoil as to whether its citizens were pro-Union or pro-the South. Maryland, of course, was a place that provided soldiers to both the North and the South. In any event, it never became part of the secession, but a number of its citizens did indeed fight for the South, including Randolph McKim. In this letter, he's writing to his mother on the evening before the Battle of Bull Run, which he will participate in and which he survived. But the evening before the battle, he's writing to his mother explaining why he's joined the Confederate Army, because he'd promised his father and his mother that he wouldn't do that without obtaining his father's permission, but he felt for the reason that he couldn't contact his father to obtain that permission, he felt that he had to just make up his own mind based on the principles he believed in. And it's quite striking how strongly he felt that fighting for the South would in fact be supporting the principles of the Declaration of Independence. So it's quite an interesting letter. After that, I'll read a short letter from Stonewall Jackson to his wife Mary, which he wrote after the Battle of Bull Run, which was the battle where he got his nickname Stonewall and where his brigade turned the tide of the battle in favor of the South. So the first letter from Private Randolph Harrison McKim of the 1st Maryland Infantry, stationed in Virginia, dated the 20th of July, 1861. My most precious mother, Mr. Hall has just made his appearance and handed me your letter and dear Margie's. It grieved me to the quick to find that you are still in ignorance of my real position, in Virginia now, and I confess I almost felt self-reproached when you said that you were perfectly satisfied with my promise not to join the Southern Army without my father's consent. I recollect full well writing that letter, and that was the thing which has kept me back so long from following what I have felt my duty to my country. This made me change my mind about joining when I had almost made up my mind to it some time ago. And this made me resolve to use every effort to get home and try and get consent to do so. I would not now be in the army and would be at home, I expect, if the condition of things in Baltimore had not rendered it pretty certain that I would be arrested because I went in arms to Harper's Ferry. I say then, in justification of my course, that I could not get home safely to get advice, and I felt very hopeful that Papa, as most other Union men in Baltimore, had changed his sentiments when he found that the government means to establish a despotism and call it by the sacred name of union. I do not now believe, after learning that I am disappointed to a great extent in this expected change so far, that Papa will not finally cease to support what he has believed a free and righteous government when he finds beyond contradiction that Lincoln has overthrown the government of our forefathers and abolished every principle of the Declaration of Independence. My dear, dear mother, I could hardly restrain tears in the midst of all the confusion and bustle of the camp this morning when I read your letter with those renewed expressions of your tender love for me. Oh, I hope you will not think me unworthy of such a love. If I have erred, do be lenient to me, you and Papa both, and do not disown your son for doing what he felt to be a holy duty to his country. Papa, if you place yourself in my position with the profound conviction I have of the holiness and righteousness of this cause, ask yourself whether you would not have unhesitatingly done what I have done. You have yourself, in my hearing, placed the duty of country first in this world's duties, and second only to the duty I owe my God. How then am I reprehensible for obeying what my very heart of hearts told me was my country's call, when I had some hope that your will would not be at variance with it, and I was unable to find out whether it was or not? I have suffered much in mind, and still do suffer. At all events, I am not actuated by selfish or cowardly motives. How easy it would have been to sit down at quiet Belvedere, preserving an inactivity which all my friends would have regarded as honourable, than at the possible loss of your parental love and care, and at the sacrifice of my comforts and the risk of my life, to do what I have done, enlist as a common soldier in the cause of liberty and right. Camp life is hard life, I know by experience. Forced marches, scanty provisions sometimes, menial offices to perform, perfect discipline to submit to, are not attractive features to anyone. Then military life has little charm for me. I have no taste for it and no ambition for military glory, but I am ready and willing to suffer all these hardships and, when necessary, to lay my life upon the altar of my country's freedom. I hope I do not seem to boast or to glorify myself in speaking thus, but if I know my own heart, this is the truth, and God, give me grace to be consistent with this profession. Do not, my precious mother, be too much alarmed and too anxious about me. I trust and hope that God will protect me from terror by night and the destruction that wasteth at noonday. I feel as if my life was to be spared. I hope yet to preach the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. But, my dear mother, we are in God's hands, and he doth not willingly afflict or grieve the children of men. He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. He does all things well, and he will give you grace to bear this trial too. Farewell, dear mother and father. Tell Mary and Margie I am, in this life and the next, your fond affectionate Randolph. Now, the next letter is from Brigadier General Thomas J. Jackson, who is writing from Manassas, Virginia, on July 22, 1861, the day after the Battle of Bull Run. My precious pet, yesterday we fought a great battle and gained a great victory, for which all the glory is due to God alone. Although under a heavy fire for several continuous hours, I received only one wound, the breaking of the longest finger of my left hand. But the doctor says the finger can be saved. It was broken about midway between the hand and knuckle, the ball passing on the side next to the forefinger. Had it struck the center, I should have lost the finger. My horse was wounded, but not killed. Your coat got an ugly wound near the hip, but my servant, who is very handy, has so far repaired it that it doesn't show very much. My preservation was entirely due, as was the glorious victory, to our God, to whom all the honor, praise, and glory be. The battle was the hardest that I have ever been in, but not near so hot in its fire. I commanded in the center, more particularly, though one of my regiments extended to the right for some distance. There were other commanders on my right and left. Whilst great credit is due to other parts of our gallant army, God made my brigade more instrumental than any other in repulsing the main attack. This is for your information only. Say nothing about it. Let others speak praise, not myself. And then to that letter, his wife Mary has added an addendum in which she says this. Though he was so reticent of his own part in the battle, it was well known that his brigade saved the day, the credit of which was justly given to its commander. At one moment it seemed as if all was lost. The troops of South Carolina, commanded by General Bee, had been overwhelmed. And he rode up to Jackson in despair, exclaiming, "They are beating us back." "Then," said Jackson, "we will give them the bayonet." This cool reply showed the unconquered mind of one who never knew that he was beaten, and put fresh courage into the heart of him who was almost ready to acknowledge defeat. And as he rode back to his command, he cried out to them, "Look at Jackson," saying, "There he stands like a stone wall. Rally behind the Virginians." The cry and the example had its effect, and the broken ranks were reformed and led to another charge when their leader fell dead with his face to the foe. But with his last breath, he had christened his companion in arms in the baptism of fire with the name that he was henceforth to bear, not only in the Southern Army, but in history, of Stonewall Jackson, while the troops that followed him on that day counted it glory enough to bear on their colors the proud title of the Stonewall Brigade. And that's the end of the reading today.